or not, good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive myths that are associated with virtually every religion, most political schemes, the problems of patriotism and the media's errant reporting, along with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to understand what is actually occurring behind those headlines while predicting how the events they describe will shape our world, which is crumbling at our feet. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms using evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly corrupt world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours, toll free, 877-300-7645. I am compelled to respond when I hear something in a public forum that is wholly opposed to what God has told us. And God's name, by the way, is Yahweh. The people who produce the commercial called Christian Mingle are clueless to that regard. They have no idea who He is. When something like that is said in a public forum, I am compelled to correct the record. God did not use Christian Mingle. He has nothing to do with it. It was not a powerful thing that the hired actors spoke of, that they are convinced that, yes, it is true that their God did a powerful thing by bringing together, by Him choosing to use Christian Mingle. I mean, just think of the stupidity of that. That the God who conceived life through DNA, who conceived the entire universe through His calculations and spoken words, would use a computer program to bring people together in marriage. What kind of a God is that? I guess that's the same level of a God that man can kill, right? The Christian God. Yeah, man kills the Christian God. The Christian God is born and dies just like ordinary men. Yeah, Christian God uses the internet and uses computers too. Sure that he's not able to calculate fast enough on his own to be able to process this information. So he needs the computer skills of the hypocrites at Christian Mingle. Well, I want to tell you, if you're finding the match for you of the God of Christian Mingle, then you're dealing with an adversarial spirit, a spirit that has nothing to do with Yahweh. Speaking of a spirit that has nothing to do with Yahweh, a demonic spirit, the spirit that is responsible for Islam. You see, Muhammad, like Paul, admitted that he was demon-possessed. Paul spoke of Satan's influence in his life many times, but in 2 Corinthians, which would have probably been his fourth letter, first was Galatians, then he wrote to Thessalonica, Corinth, Thessalonica again, because the first letter didn't do any good, and then to Corinth again, and then finally to his overall treatise to the Romans. In the second letter to the Corinthians, when Paul is writing, he admits being demon-possessed. That's the goad or thorn in his side is a messenger from Satan. Well, the consequence of Muhammad being demon-possessed, like Paul, is that the rant that he has left behind, in this case the Quran with Muhammad, the epistles of Paul in the case of the Christian New Testament, bring about a horrific reality, one where free will is for naught, one where Satan becomes God, and where all manner of calamity unfolds. And so as we witness what happened in Egypt, once a secular dictator was overthrown and a Islamic theocracy was voted into power, what we witnessed in Egypt was precisely what's wrong with democracy. It's why our founding fathers in this country despised democracy. It's why this president, who is opposed to the interest of America and is opposed to his constitution, says that he is in favor of and supports democracy in Egypt. Democracy is a horrible thing. It's always the tyranny of the majority over the minority. That in Egypt, the majority of the people are fundamentalist Muslims. They voted overwhelmingly for a theocracy. They got it. A minority of the Egyptians, the largest of that majority being the Copt Christians, are being terrorized as a result. And so now they're trying to oppose what they have done. And it's just so ironic that those who are secularist and campaigned for democracy couldn't count. That they couldn't figure out that if they actually eliminated the secular dictatorship of Mubarak and gave each person a vote, that since the people are more influenced by their imams and Islam than anything else, that giving them the vote would be the same thing as giving the vote democracy to those who are living in Iraq. What do? They voted for a Shiite theocracy that was controlled by Tehran, Iran, effectively giving Iraq to Iran. What did you expect to have happen? Oh, liberal Democrats in Egypt. You called for democracy, and what did you get? An Islamic theocracy. It was inevitable. And how do you expect that to change now that you're protesting against the harm that you brought upon yourselves? And how is it that the United States thinks that the very movement that it unleashed, I mean, this happened because Obama encouraged the Muslim Brotherhood to rebel against Mubarak. That was the speech that the president gave in Cairo at the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Jahar University. Speaking on behalf of the Muslim Brotherhood and Islam, speaking about how wonderful it is and how great a religion and how it's changed the world for good, unleashing it, this is what it has brought on Egypt. And so now, millions of people have taken to the streets, protesting about what they brought upon themselves. Well, Egypt's army, according to the BBC, is now holding talks with the government and protest leaders. A deadline is set for a resolution to the mass demonstration, and it is approaching quickly. President Morsi, of course, because he is a fundamentalist Muslim, has rejected the ultimatum. Guess where Morsi, of course, was educated? United States, University of Southern California. In fact, the dominant Muslim Students Association, the one most responsible for disseminating fundamentalist Islamic information to the country and to the world, is the USC MSA. So President Morsi has rejected the ultimatum to meet the demands of the people or face military intervention. He says that he is Egypt's legitimate leader and will not be forced to resign. Yeah, he is, actually. He was voted in by more than a two-thirds vote. The army says that it will issue a statement after the deadline expires. Clashes broke out at rival protests across the country overnight, with at least 16 people being killed in those protests. You know, why is it, and this is a question I did not answer, I'm not even sure I finished posing it, but why is it that the United States is so ignorant of Islam that it would go about trying to impose democracy choice in countries where the vast preponderance of the people, say in the range of 80 to 90% of the people, are Muslim? I mean, Islam means submission. It means surrender. The Quran says that there is no choice for a Muslim because Allah has made that choice for them. You can never, ever have a legitimate democracy. Not that a democracy is a good thing. In an Islamic country, ultimately, the country will either choose not to be associated with Islam from its governance point of view, which happens occasionally. It happened for a while in Turkey, although that has been completely undermined recently. Or that country will move towards what Egypt and Libya and Tunisia have moved towards, which is being an Islamic theocracy. The same thing is true in the Sudan and Saudi Arabia, now in Iraq. It's exactly what you're going to see again in Afghanistan. It isn't possible for there to be an enduring democracy or even a republic in an Islamic country. Not in a country where the majority of the people are fundamentalists. Islam is wholly opposed to that. By Islam, I'm not talking about the opinions of an individual Muslim. I'm talking about what the scriptures of Islam, what they claim was inspired, say. Well, Mr. Morsi's opponents say that he and the Muslim Brotherhood Party, for which he comes, are pushing an Islamic agenda onto Egypt and that he should stand down. Of course he's pushing an Islamist agenda onto Egypt. He's a representative of the Muslim Brotherhood. What did you think was going to happen? The Brotherhood has said that the army's action amounts to a coup. Yes, it does. In a defiant televised speech on Tuesday evening, Mr. Morsi said that he would give his life to defend constitutional legitimacy. Now, he'll give his life as a martyr to Islam. But since he knows that the current constitution that he and the Salaf party wrote for Egypt is a Islamic constitution based entirely on Islamic principles, saying one is saying the other. They are inseparable. He, of course, blamed the unrest on corruption and the remnants of the ousted Hosni Mubarak regime, which is absolutely rubbish. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering This. We're considering the consequence of things that have happened in Egypt. It was easy to predict that this was going to occur. It's the same thing when America invaded Iraq and decided that it was going to impose choice. It's kind of an interesting concept, isn't it? Impose democracy on Iraq. It's very similar to what the Greeks did with the Delian League. I mean, the world only has two historic examples of democracy lasting any length of time. First of those is in Sparta, which was the world's longest surviving democracy, over 300 years. And Sparta, of course, was probably the most ruthless, oppressive, just revolting country maybe in human history, in terms of the way they treated their women, the way they treated their children, the way they treated their neighbors. Treating their women as nothing but manufacturing plants for warriors. They treated their neighbors by enslaving them viciously. And the children, if they were a boy, they had a singular mission, which they beat them so that they would become tough, so that they could become good soldiers. That was the world's longest example of democracy. The Delian League, though, is kind of akin to what the United States is doing around the world, trying to impose democracy. And it imposed democracy on the islands and the coast of what we now call Turkey and in the Aegean Sea. And they did so for political purposes. They wanted a buffer between them and the Persians so that there was a trip cord that others would hopefully begin to stall a Persian advance on Greece before they snuck up on Greece and started pummeling them again. So they imposed democracy. It worked as well as it's working in Egypt, working as well as it's working in Iraq and other places around the world. Well, on a statement on Tuesday, this would be yesterday, the Army swore to sacrifice even our blood for Egypt and its people, to defend against any terrorist, radical or fool. So who do you think the radical and fool is that they're talking about? Could it be Mercy? The Army plan reportedly includes an outline for new presidential elections, and the last elections were a landslide. The Muslim Brotherhood and Salaf Party combined, the Salaf would be even more fundamentalist than the Muslim Brotherhood, they won collectively around 65 to 70% of the vote. And so how is the outcome going to be any different if you vote again? I mean, that's the problem, is that fundamentalist Islam is the dominant force in the Islamic world today. Mr. Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood still have significant public support. However, the article says, and both sides have drawn large, huge, in fact, it says, numbers to rallies in recent days. Yes, the majority of Egyptians favor the Muslim Brotherhood. There's an article today sent to me by a friend. It reads that last week, a 22-year-old Dutch journalist was gang-raped in Tahrir Square, and that she had to undergo surgery for her injuries. The rape was so severe, and so many of the protesters participated in the rape, that she had to undergo surgery for it. The assault reminds us yet again of an often overlooked aspect of the Egyptian revolution. We talked about this yesterday in Syria, that the biggest, most painful, most repulsive aspect of the civil war in Syria isn't the fact that 100,000 people have been killed. It isn't that 1 million people have been displaced as refugees. It isn't that a few hundred have died as a result of one side or the other potentially using chemical weapons. It's that hundreds of thousands of women and little girls have been raped. And that there is no protection from rape. And when a woman is raped in an Islamic country, the victim of rape, the woman, is the criminal. Her family is motivated to kill her for their honor. And the woman, if she is not killed, is imprisoned. It is the ugliest part of the underbelly of Islam. Now, rape is condoned in Islam, in the Quran, because Muhammad was a rapist. He is shown raping the women, the most attractive women, of the communities he and the first Muslims as terrorists attacked. After killing the women's parents, after killing the woman's husband, Muhammad would pick the prettiest woman for himself and rape her. That is the legacy of Islam. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. A story from CNN. This is written as an editorial on behalf of CNN. The woman who's a Middle East specialist, by her own description, was talking about how the ugly underbelly of the Egyptian revolution was rape. And we were comparing that to what was happening in Syria. There is a direct correlation between the influence of Islam and the number of rapes. In Afghanistan, for example, we went into an Afghanistan because largely we said that the Taliban was treating women poorly, and so that the great benefit of the United States invasion is schools for little girls and women being treated with rights and giving the right to vote. But since everyone that we've empowered in Afghanistan is a fundamentalist Muslim, the rights for women have actually suffered in Afghanistan. There are more rapes, imprisonment of girls on sex crimes. The sex crime for a girl is for her to be, 12 years old, forced to marry some old guy because her parents wanted to make money on her, and she refuses to have sex with the old fart, and therefore she is put in jail for that. Now, And also, many Afghani girls are in jail now because they were raped. And in Islam, the victim of rape is considered the one who provoked the rape, and therefore it's never the man who is jailed, it's always the woman. So this article reads, when Egyptians overthrew their dictator in 2011, one of the first celebratory acts in Tahrir Square included the gang beating and sexual assault of an American journalist. Her name was Laura Logan, who, like the Dutch journalist this last week, landed in the hospital. Now, the Quran authorizes rape. In Sharia law, does not punish rape, at least it doesn't for the perpetrator, only against the victim. The Logan rape has always been portrayed as another unfortunate byproduct of mob violence. This has nothing to do with mob violence. Nothing. It's a direct legacy of Islam. You empower Islam, you increase the number of women who are raped. In fact, it was much more than that. It is a warning shot fired by men whose political beliefs are founded on a common pillar. Women must stay out of the public square. Now, here's a woman who claims to be a specialist on the Middle East. She's doing something which I would applaud, which is speaking on behalf of women who are victimized by Islam, but yet she can't say Islam. She says they're victimized by men whose political beliefs. No. They're victimized by the religion. Period. End of conversation. Period. Has nothing to do with men whose political beliefs are founded on women must stay out of the public square. It is their religious beliefs. The Quran says that women are worth half of a man. Muhammad said that it was appropriate for men to beat their wives, to enslave them, to starve them, to use them as if they were a domesticated animal. One of the hallmarks of revolutionary victory and Tahrir Square has always been rape and sexual harassment. Has always been. So, what happened in the revolution in Egypt? A 70% majority empowered an Islamic government. So the hallmark of the Islamic revolution in Egypt is rape and sexual harassment. Now she goes right back to mobs. Mobs of men routinely set upon women, isolating, stripping, and groping. No one is ever arrested or held accountable. Of course they're not arrested and held accountable, because in Sharia, in Islamic law, men are not guilty of harassing women. It's authorized. And elected officials shrug their shoulders and blame the victims. Well, I tell you what, this woman would do well to read Prophet of Doom so that she might understand the nature of this religion. Vigilante groups have been organized to track the incidents. Operation Anti-Sexual Harassment, one of those groups, recorded 46 cases of sexual assaults and harassments against women on Sunday night alone this week. Sunday night alone this week, 46 cases of sexual assault, and has added 17 more to this list that the group said happened on Monday of this week. Egyptian women are the primary victims of sexual violence, and ultimately they are in the intended recipients of the message. Stay home. Your input in government and politics is not wanted. No, stay home. We want you to cast your vote. Actually, we do. We want you to cast your vote, as the imam directs you, to the very people who are oppressing you. Stockholm syndrome, alive and well in Islam. Raping foreign journalists, guaranteed to attract global attention, is merely a more efficient way of getting the message across. That's not true. No one who is raping a foreign journalist is saying, you know, we're going to rape, I'm going to schedule a rape. I'm going to go find a foreign journalist, and then I'm going to go rape her because I'm trying to convey a message. I mean, how utterly stupid. Here's a woman who is actually doing the right thing. She's exposing the fact that sexual harassment is epidemic now that Islam is in control of Egypt, and she cannot, for the life of her, come up with a reason behind it. and blaming all manner of things, none of which make any sense. There is no rapist who has said, you know, I'm here in a large mob in a public square. I'm rallying on behalf of my religion. And what I think I'm going to go do is find a foreign journalist and get a gang of guys to rape her because I want to make a political statement. All right. When Egyptians overthrew the dictator, the Muslim Brotherhood took advantage of the public hatred of the dictator to ally him with the Western progressive ideals, including gender equality. Out went the non-government organizations that worked to make divorce easier and inheritance laws fairer. In came the thugs who stripped and beat women in the streets. Now, inheritance laws are not fair for women in Egypt because they're now based upon Islam, and Islam says that a woman gets half of what a man gets because she has half the worth. That's why they are now being reversed. And it's not a hatred of Western progressive ideals, including gender equality, that was associated with Mubarak that people were protesting against. It's that now that an Islamic regime is empowered, you're seeing Islam as it really is, barefaced and naked, and it's ugly. Granted, some of these crimes against women were committed by the military and the police themselves, because guess what? They're also Muslims. As women alike, Mona Hathaway, a journalist whose arms were broken by the soldiers, and Samira Ibrahim, a young protester who sued the government, accusing the army doctor of submitting her to a forced virginity test, have reported. Dina Zakaria, an Egyptian journalist, reported that the men who raped the Dutch journalist last week called themselves revolutionists. That label should surprise no one. If one fervently believes that women should stay inside of their homes and out of the business of public life, what better way to accomplish that than rampant sexual harassment and the sexual assault in a country in which women's virginity and honor is the sine qua non of female participation in society? Well, the rape of women, the abuse of women, and rape is nothing but a control mechanism. Control over women is what caused Islam to thrive. Until Muhammad revealed Quran surahs that gave men absolute control over women, to abuse them any way they wanted, and to have as many women as they wished, because although four are officially allowed, the fourth can become a rotating victim. A temporary marriage, that's why they can have sex with prostitutes. That's why they can rape and not be guilty of adultery. But when he came up with that concept, and we saw the first manifestations of the Stockholm syndromes of when the women stopped being beaten for a moment and were fed and not sexually assaulted for moments, that they actually saw mercy in their tormentors. That is the glue that made Islam possible. Prior to that time, Islam was floundering. After that time, particularly when Muhammad authorized rape as one of the rewards for going out on his terrorist raids, Islam thrived. Not long ago, Egyptian Salafist preacher Ahmad Mahmoud Abdullah said that women protesting in Tahrir Square, quote, have no shame and want to be raped. The public face of the Muslim Brotherhood would never espouse such a statement, but its founding intellectual lights never hid the fact that a pillar of their planned theocracy was keeping women powerless. And the record in office is one of sexist exclusion. Women held only 8 seats out of the 498 in the disbanded parliament. 8 of 498. Women made up 77% of the Constitutional Assembly that drafted the Egyptian constitution. No wonder when then that document, approved by a referendum in 2012, refers to women as sisters and mothers, and only within the framework of family, not employment nor public life, even though a majority of Egyptian women work. Egypt has always been a place where life for women is nasty and brutish. Well, not always. Only since the first Muslims invaded Egypt shortly after Muhammad's death. Since that time, it has been a place where life for women is nasty and brutish, if not short. Last year, a UNICEF survey, United Nations survey, showed that 91% of women, 91% of women between the ages of 15 and 49 said that they had to go female genital mutilation. 91% of Egyptian women had to go female genital mutilation. Now think of mothers imposing that on their daughters, making absolute certain that they would remain virgins through this barbaric method, and so that they would never find pleasure in physical love. I'm your host, Yada. You can engage in this conversation if you'd like to participate along with us. 877-300-7645 is our toll-free number. Amazing that America is paying to keep the Islamic theocracy of Egypt alive. President of the United States says, hey, we're all in favor of the democratic process there. Well, the democratic process brought in an Islamic government in Egypt. No wonder that Obama loves it. And yet it's a place where 91% of Egyptian women between 15 and 49, according to the United Nations, said that they were forced to undergo female genital mutilation. It is not a political statement. That is a religious statement. Yesterday we talked about a video of three Catholic priests being savagely beheaded before a crowd of thousands of Muslims chanting Allahu Akbar. And the face of the little boy that was standing a foot away from one of the severed heads looking up and taking it all in and saying, well, what is the likelihood that someone like that is going to have a productive, valuable life? Well, these women that have been brutalized by their own mothers, savaged by them, savaged by this man's, Muhammad's, despicable religion, this man who was a sexual pervert, who was a rapist, who was incestuous, who himself was a pedophile. I mean, imagine that, a religion founded by a man who was a pedophile. And the legacy of that pedophile's religion is the mutilation of 91% of Egyptian girls. The United Nations Entity for Gender Equality in May reported that 99.3% of Egyptian women said that they had been subjected to sexual violence. 99% of Egyptian women told the United Nations that they had been subjected to sexual violence. It's a consequence of Islam. If you're a woman and you do not hate Islam, if you're a man and loves women, respects women, and you do not hate Islam, then you're grotesquely immoral. You're irrational. You're ignorant. You're despicable. Yes. If you are a man that respects women, if you are a woman and you do not despise Islam, then you're despicable. If you do not despise the President of the United States for praising Islam, you're despicable. All of the women libs out there that voted for Obama and see him as their great Messiah, the man who ushered this kind of treatment in throughout the Middle East, making sure that it's perpetuated because of the influence of Islam, supporting this man who lies on behalf of this religion. You're despicable. Rape victims almost never go to the hospital and are certainly not to the police. Why don't rape victims in an Islamic country go to the hospital or to the police? Because they will be tried, they will be convicted, they will be incarcerated. And their families will then try to kill them. Because the woman who is the victim of rape is the one who is the criminal in the eyes of this perverted religion. There are no medical protocols for rape, and police treat female victims as if they were prostitutes. Whether or not that violence is political, whether or not that violence is political, is worthy of discussion. It's not worthy of discussion. It's not political. She says, I believe it is. Then you're an idiot. At the moment, no one even debates it. It is the elephant in the room. No, the elephant in the room is the influence of Islam. It's savagery. The fact that the Islamic government in the Sudan perpetrated genocide on 3 million people. That Islam fighting Islam, Muslim against Muslim in Syria, has killed 100,000 people and raped hundreds of thousands more. The fact that abuse, sexual abuse of women, and the treatment of women that degrades them is the legacy of Islam. That is the elephant in the room. And no one is even discussing it. We'll be back with Shattering This after the commercial break.